Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Terrell Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Another week. Another show. You are now talking with TD. Shout out to each of you for tuning in. Got an awesome show for you today. You know, Christian Fulton is a Titan. So we went in and got his DB coach, Corey Raymond from LSU. We'll talk with him. We got Gene Clemens from Football Game Plan breaking it on down. We're going to talk about the trenches on the defensive side of things. And we got another Christian Wilkerson, SEMO wide receiver, an undrafted free agent that signed with the Titans. He is a guy that John Robinson specifically went after, so we'll get into that a little bit. Going to be a great show. First things first, we have to talk a little bit about this roster. I had a post that went up on ESPN.com. Make sure you click on that and check it out. But wanted to get into just how the roster looks. And I tell you, one of the things that's really interesting is that DB group. Logan Ryan, obviously, on Tuesday, he made it clear that he is not returning to the Titans. I think the Titans kind of made it clear, too, giving 26 to Christian Fulton. So that's going to be, paired with Jarrell Casey, the biggest loss on this roster. And I think those two were two of the biggest leaders in that locker room. They're going to have to find a way to replace that. I think when you look at Christian Fulton and Jonathan Joseph, who was made official on Wednesday, I think you combine those two. And you can not, I'm not going to say replace Logan Ryan, but I think you can help ease the loss of Logan Ryan. I'm going to ask Coach Raymond about Christian Fulton and the nickel spot. I think that's something that we have to talk about. Jonathan Joseph obviously is a guy on the outside, but when you combine the leadership that Joseph brings, now obviously it's going to be tougher for him to come in and do that now, right, with those guys not being in the building, grinding together. But I think as time wears on, he will emerge as a leader in that DB group, and that's a good thing. And I think for Fulton, he will eventually emerge as the top nickel guy. But honestly, when I look at it, I think that nickel group is going to be a collection. I think Amani Hooker is going to be in there, especially when they're going against bigger receivers and move tight ends. Crookshank, don't be surprised if Dane Crookshank get some reps there as well, especially in dime package, because you saw him do that, you know, as a dime, like a sub-package linebacker, so to speak, at Arizona in college a few years ago. So he's capable. But then the other one is Adoree Jackson. I am almost certain that they're going to bump Adoree in there sometimes and give him a shot. And, hey, by the way, they picked up the fifth-year option on him, $10.2 million. Not bad. Not bad at all for Adoree. So that's a good thing. But I think the secondary is going to be all right because that safety group is so good. And I think the DBs, you know, the corners will pick up, and Malcolm Butler is back. But then this defensive line, and that's why I wanted to have Gene Clemens on, because I wanted to get into some of the things that they could do that they're going to have to do, actually, to make up for the loss of Jarrell Casey. So a couple things on the defense. When you look at the offense, you know, who benefited the most from the draft? I had a post on a 32 for 32 NFL Nation. That's what we decided for each team, who benefited the most. And I selected Khalif Raymond. And I think Khalif Raymond is going to have a big role on this team as a field stretcher. You saw what he did in the Colts game. You saw what he did in the Ravens game. Play action, bombs over Baghdad, and that's what they do. So I'm going to be looking for Khalif Raymond. I know Tajae Sharp left. They didn't bring in another receiver in the draft, but they did sign a guy in Christian Fulton Christian Wilkerson. I'm going to do that a lot this year. I already see it. The crazy thing is they both spell Christian with a K too, so it just ties it together too much. But Wilkerson is a solid player, And I posted a couple links to some videos on him. So I think he has a good chance of making the roster. So we'll see what happens there. The running back situation is what it is. Darrington Evans is a solid pickup, though. Very good in pass pro. I think he's a guy that could catch the ball out of the field, but his explosiveness. And that's something that we talked to when we had Keyshawn Vaughn on. We talked to him about one cut, get up field, and how that matches the zones, outside zone specifically, and the explosiveness that he brings. Evans is just, well, actually, if you go by time speed, Evans is more explosive. But, I mean, both of those guys have multiple 70-plus yard runs on their resume, so that's a good thing. Evans is going to be interesting. He's selected number 32. So, you know, we'll see how good he makes that number look. But I like what the Titans have done. I think this team is going to be really solid. Obviously, the Jadeveon Clowney situation, the sweepstakes continues to, you know, roll. But we'll see what happens there. So that's my take on the roster. If you want a little bit more, check out the article on ESPN.com. It's on the Titans page. And by the way, subscribe to that. That way you get all the updates. And while we're talking about subscribing, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, you know what to do. Search out Talking With TD, subscribe, 5-star rating. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back with our first guest.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
I'm just living my life, and I'ma give me some money. What's that? Freddy Cougar, I promote.
All right, all right. Man, I wanted to bring you someone who I said the Titans were going to sign. They did it. And I tell you what, I connected with his agent. He showed me some film, and I was like, yeah, this guy could definitely have a presence on this team. We're going to bring in Simo, wide receiver, Christian Wilkerson. Well, actually, now Titans wide receiver, Christian Wilkerson. What's going on, man?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I wanted to prelude your visit with that monster. I know that's your shot. So, you know what I mean? Make you feel at home.
How you know that's my favorite artist, man?
Hey, good brother. I'm a reporter, so I dig deep, man. I does my research.
Hey, yeah, you got my favorite song, too, man. Crazy.
Yes, sir. So I want to get right into it. I mean, obviously, you know, you're a SEMO guy, and that's a connection to John Robinson. How did that whole process of you know, you being on the Titans' radar, how did that evolve?
They've been coming to practice all year. I mean, they were there, like, our first summer practice with the school. They were there. It was a scout there, and I've just been in contact with them all year. I really enjoyed talking to them. They've been telling me how they feel about my game, what I need to work on, you know, things like that. So it just, the relationship just grew as the season went on. As I did better, I talked to them more and more. They were coming in watching film and stuff. So it just grew from there.
What were some of the things they said that they liked about you?
The way I attacked the ball, my catch radius, how I fight after the catch, things like that.
Yeah.
Go across the middle, take a hit, and get up and do it again.
That attack in the football, that's something that stood out to me when I watched you. You do a good job of that. So what goes into it? Is it the timing? Is there – what makes you able to time that jump and just, you know, for lack of better words, moss DBs like that?
Just the want to get the ball, you know. Just feel like every ball is your last ball coming your way, so just go attack it. Timing, really just something I've been doing all my life. So jump ball, ever since I was in middle school, I've been just a fade route runner. Even though we don't run that anymore, we just throw it up and I go get it. And I play basketball, so catching alleys and rebounds really helped with that as well.
That's a good point. One of the things I remember, I used to cover the Eagles, and I would always talk with Alshon Jeffrey, and he told me that catching those 80-20 is what he called it. He didn't call them 50-50. But catching those balls was a lot like catching a oop dunk. Is that an accurate assessment?
That's exactly what it is. You catch it at the highest point, you know, where you can jump the highest to get it, where the DB can't get it, go over top. So it's just like an alley. Instead of dunking it, but you're coming down with it running. So.
Now, you're a Memphis guy, so growing up, were you a Titans fan? Or, like, are you playing for the team that you grew up rooting for?
Yeah, really, I did grow up. Like, I was an undercover fan, you know. I didn't want to be a Titan fan, but I always was a Titan fan for some reason. I never admitted to it, but it's all just unfolding. Like, I've really been a Titan fan all my life, really.
It was written. Did you like Derek Mason?
Oh, I did. I like Derek Mason. I like when Dexter McCluster was there. It's a lot of guys. Because I know my cousin used to like the Titans, and we, like, kind of like brothers. So whatever he liked, I disliked, really. I tried to, but I couldn't.
You couldn't help yourself, man. You had to like the Titans. I get it. So that being said, what was the first thing you thought of when you inked to paper, you know what I mean, that you were going to be a Tennessee Titan?
My dream is coming true, but I got a lot of work to do to prove myself and come and contribute to the team so I can make it all work, because I haven't contributed to the team, so I really haven't done anything in my dream, you know. But signing was a big step into a lifelong dream and a lifelong hard work. They're doing a lot of work, finally coming out into fruition. So,
and you never settle. So that's a good point that you're making there. It's just the beginning. And you had other opportunities, though. I mean, it's not like the Titans were the only team that was interested in you. So what was it about the Titans that you said, you know what, Greg, this is the team that I want to sign with?
Just talking to the scouts all year. I talked to Coach Vrabel, John Robinson, Coach Moore. So I've been talked to the OC a couple times. So just talking to those guys, hearing them, how they sound when they talk to me, gave me a lot of hope. They didn't draft the wide receiver, so
yeah.
I guess the undrafted free agents are their wide receiver picks for the draft. So they just give me a fighting chance to come and contribute to the team, give me the best chance to contribute, you know, because we are on the same level right now from their eyes, I believe. And we can just work our way up through hard work.
A lot of guys that talk to Vrabel, they come away, like, really impressed with him. For you, like, did anything stand out about talking to him? Like, I'm not saying, like, you talked to Jesus, but I'm just saying, like, did anything stand out from your conversation with Coach Vrabel?
Oh, yeah, he just believes in, like, finishing and fighting for your brother, you know, finishing past the guy with the ball, you know, never looking back, going hard, never settling, things like that. So I come from a college like that, so it's just second nature to me now to do it. That's what I'm planning on doing when I get there.
And let's get into your game a little bit, because, you know, you look at what the Titans lost. Tajae Sharp was a guy that, you know, gave him an option in the slot. He played primarily on the outside, but he was a big body in the slot. I'm not saying you're coming in to replace him specifically, but how do you see yourself fitting into what the Titans do just from your personal game perspective?
Well, yeah, being able to move around inside and outside, play slot in college, and I play outside in college, played the X position and the F and the H. So just being able to move around, go across the middle, make those tough catches, and just, you know, use my big body, jump over guys if I have to. I believe I can run past some guys if I have to. So whatever they need me to do to contribute to the team, it doesn't matter. Special teams, catching, returning kicks, covering kicks. I just want to be able to do it all for them.
I like that. You have to be willing to do everything. When you look at just your resume, I mean, there are different games that you stood out. I thought the Southern Illinois one was an outstanding game. What games would you say are the best to show fans what it is that you bring to the table?
My Eastern Kentucky game, I had 250, you know, like 10 catches. I believe it showed that I could run the curl route, you know. I can go deep, run past a couple guys. So I can take a slant 20, 40 yards after the catch. That was one game, even though that wasn't my best game of my college career, but I believe it just showed all my talent in one, you know, in one game.
In that Southern Illinois game, obviously, you know, you were matched up with Madre Harper, another pro prospect. Was that one of those games where you went in and you was just like, yo, I, no offense, but I got to kill this dude on the opposite side of me? And I'm sure you had that approach every game, but knowing that this is a game that, you know, really gives scouts a chance to see you go against someone else that will likely be playing on Sundays.
Yeah, it really, I really wasn't focused on him. It was really the safety.
Chin?
I can't think of his name. Yeah. Jeremy Chin. That was really the guy where we weren't focused on. We didn't game plan around him because we felt we had better players on our side. But just knowing that he had all the hype coming in, it really didn't motivate because it was the first game of the season, so that gives you all the hype you really need having the first game. But I just came in knowing that I needed to help the team win because they were a good defensive team, you know. So I just wanted to go deep on them. Throw me the ball and I'll win one-on-one, even though they – so that was just a good thing. And I really didn't know he was a big old, you know, guy that was coming out this year. Until after the game, they told me who he was, and I was like, I was just doing my job. I didn't know who was in front of me. I was just going to give everybody the work, whoever lined up.
Yeah, that one-hander you had was outstanding, by the way.
Yeah, I wish I would have scored it, man, but I tripped up, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. Yeah. So when you look at some of your measurables, did you have a timed 40?
Yeah, I ran a 4.4.
Okay.
4.6.
So the speed is there. What did you measure in at as far as height and weight's concerned? What was it, that 6'1", 200, or where were you at?
I was 6'1", like 203.
Okay. Yeah. So the size is there, the speed is there. That being said, what do you feel like will be some of the obstacles that you'll have to push through to make this Titans roster?
Obstacles, I believe, just coming in, being able to play everything, do everything the coaches want me to do. You know, I didn't really have to play special teams in college, but I can adjust to it and do that in the pros, just play every special team. If the coach need me to play slack and move around, so knowing the whole playbook probably would be the biggest obstacle. Because it's different verbiage, different lingo. It's just like learning a new language, you know. So that'll be the biggest thing, just learning the playbook, learning all the receiver positions.
How is this offseason going? Because I know they started their virtual meetings. Are they getting you involved with that? Is that something that you're able to kind of get those mental reps, so to speak, or even just that start of acclimating into their scheme?
I've been studying plays now for about, well, not plays, but formations and things like that for about a week now. So it's coming to me. You know, I love the playbook. I love football. So just learning new stuff about football, it's not really work. It's like fun. So
yeah,
it's not really hard. So, yeah.
Gotcha. And I'm sure you're doing everything you need to do to stay in shape. So that's not a question. What's next for you as we get ready to, you know, see what happens? You got the schedule release tomorrow. But, I mean, for you personally, well, what's next in this process?
No, I'm coming to Nashville to start back training with the guy I train with for my pro day and stuff. They're opening the gyms up Monday, so I'll be in Nashville working out. So hopefully tennis, the NFL opens up and we can be able to go into the facility. But other than that, I'm just working out, keeping my head down, getting in the playbook, learning everything I can learn. I'm trying to learn all these positions since I have more time with the playbook than I would normally have if it was a regular season. Because minicamp would already be here.
Yeah. And before we let you go, again, the SEMO connection, obviously, with John Robinson, was that something that you kind of felt, you know, in the process as you were talking to him? Did it seem like he showed a particular interest in you?
Yes. That was a big part. Well, one of the biggest parts. Him coming from SEMO, know how it feels to be like underdog, small school guy coming from the same school as me. We just clicked when we got on the phone. When we got on the phone, we FaceTime. It was like a genuine feeling, you know, when we were talking. So it was a big deal, and that was one of the reasons I wanted to be there too, was to play for a SEMO guy. You know, I don't want to let them down at all. Alumni, so
There you have it. That's Christian Wilkerson, former SEMO, now Titans wide receiver, folks. Hopefully we do have a training camp so you will be able to see this guy get down. I've seen it. You check my timeline out. It's out there. We'll put some more stuff out there. And, Christian, we appreciate you coming on.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Take it easy.
You too.
This is Jayon Brown, and you're now talking with TD.
I think very deeply.
Let us begin. All right, as we continue, you heard what KRS-One said. In about 4 seconds, the teacher will begin to speak. And we're going to do that literally because we have one of my close friends in the industry, Football Game Plans, Gene Clemens. He's also a head coach in high school, Herschel V. Jenkins High School in Savannah. So we're talking to someone who has a good understanding of what goes on. You can check him out on X and O's, The Joes. That's an outstanding video series on YouTube, breaking things down. Without further ado, we're going to bring in my man, Gene Clemens. I call him the Rev because he preaches. Gene, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you, sir? How you doing?
I'm doing really well, man. I wanted to bring you on to talk a little bit about this defensive line. And obviously, this is a team that lost Jarrell Casey. So first things first, in your perspective, what did the Titans lose when they traded Jarrell Casey to the Broncos?
I mean, for me, I understand it from the perspective of the team and saying, you know, maybe let's do the Patriots approach and get rid of them, you know, a year, 2 years too early rather than 1 or 2 years too late. But what you really lose with Casey is that diversity. You're able to put him in so many different places on the defensive line that I really think it's hard to have someone else come in and take his position. I actually think that he equates to 2 to 3 different people having to fill in for the roles that he was able to fill. And that's just on the field. We're not even talking about what he does in the locker room and the respect and how he commands his presence. I think that all of that plays into a situation where the Titans are going to be looking for somebody in that front line to be able to step up and be a leader. And I'm not sure if they have a guy that's ready to do that yet.
And whenever they're asked about that, they point to Jeffrey Simmons. And in my opinion, Simmons and Casey are two different players. I'm not going to say, you know, Casey is just slam dunk better than him or anything like that, but they're just different. What's your take on the mention of Simmons as the guy, okay, he's the one that's going to help us fill in this need?
Well, I think it's easy to say that Simmons is the plug, but what you're forgetting is that when you had Casey, you also had a Simmons.
Basically.
So now who's the replacement for Simmons? If Simmons is the replacement for Casey, then who's the replacement for Simmons? And to me, that's what they're missing is that even if Simmons can come in and give you the same things that Casey was able to come in and give you, who's going to come in and give you what Simmons was able to do, especially when he came back from injury? And we both talked about it. It was instantaneous, his impact on the defensive line from that position. But when it comes down to breaking down their game individually, I think that Casey has an ability to go inside a lot better than Simmons does. I can see Casey lining up in a 0, lining up in a 1, lining up in a 2-I. I don't really think that's the best place to play Simmons. I think Simmons is a lot better as a 4-4-I, 5-tech, maybe even a 3-technique. Depending upon what you have going on, I don't really see him being able to essentially play anywhere from the 5 to the 0 like you can with Casey.
Interesting. And it's funny, and this is one of the times where our motto, size is not a skill, comes into play, because Simmons is a bigger guy than Casey. But here we are saying that Casey is a better fit inside. Another option
is leverage.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry. I think it's leverage. I think Casey just does a better job of getting leverage on interior linemen who tend to be more bulldogs than tackles tend to be.
And he's a lot more sudden, too, off the ball. So that helps as well. One of the other guys that they mentioned as someone that will help from a versatility standpoint is Larrell Murchison, the fifth-round pick. Now, obviously, he's a productive player coming out of NC State, but what's your take on how he would fit into that rotation, into that D-line group?
I think he's a, you know, I think when you look at his rotation, he's probably your quintessential three technique, a guy who has the explosiveness, who can be effective in the run and pass game. I like the way he uses his hands. I like his get off. I think he's definitely a rotational player right now. I just don't know if Simmons is your new Casey. I don't know if he's your new Simmons. And that's the problem to me, is I just don't know if he's ready to be able to step up to that level. I think he's going to be a guy that definitely can be effective for him in a platoon type of situation. But I don't know if he's ready to man up and take all of the snaps that Simmons was taking from that position, while Simmons takes all the snaps that Casey was taking.
So now that we went over the new addition, we went over the new role that Simmons is going to have, when you look at this group of guys up front, in addition to their outside backers, what's your outlook on what it is that they can do?
Well, I think that what they're probably thinking is we need to get more explosive. I think that they've been kind of a bend but don't break type of defensive line, and even if you add in those outside linebackers that are more of your pass rushing sort, I think that they are looking and saying we need to be more explosive. We see what the league is. The league is Lamar Jacksons and Patrick Mahomes and 4-2-5 wide receivers all over the place. Like, they have to be able to adjust to that. It can't just be about we're going to plug up our hole and, you know, disrupt from the inside and flush. It has to be an ability to collapse the pocket, make those quarterbacks try to escape north and south, and then rally to those sacks subsequently because of it. So I think you're going to see a lot more dynamic, at least they're hoping to be a lot more dynamic from the outside. That's why you bring in a guy like Vic Beasley, and you hope that that Landry and Beasley combination on the outside can be one, especially in obvious passing downs, that can be really disruptive. So I think you'll probably see a lot more explosion from outside in as opposed to from inside out, as you may have seen in the past.
What is your take on Vic Beasley as a player? Because, you know, one of the things, and it's good to ask you this question because you are a head coach, right? So you know what it's like to have a guy who's talented and say, you know, I have to dig into him and pull that talent out and showcase it throughout the week in practice as well as on game day. So I want to ask you, what is it about Vic Beasley? What's your take on him as far as being able to get him to turn back the clock to that year he led the NFL in sacks, or even turn it back to coming out of Clemson being a top 10 pick?
Well, I think first you have to ask yourself, because we have enough film on him, was that season an anomaly?
Mm-hmm.
Is the mean for Vic Beasley anywhere between 5 and 8 sacks? And if that's the case, okay, then he's a rotational guy. He's a guy who's going to be a third down, second and long pass rush specialist. And then you have to accept him for what he is. And I think the greatest thing about having the head coach that the Titans has, no one's going to understand letting a guy be what he is and not trying to ask him to do more than that guy, because he comes from a system in the Patriots that has been built on that forever, where we're not going to look at what this kid can't do, or we're not going to look at what this man can't do. We're going to only focus on the things that they can. And so I think if you tell Vic Beasley, listen, your job is to come in and wreak havoc off the edge, you know, on obvious pass down situations, I think that you can realistically expect anywhere between 6 and 9 sacks, and it would be great if he could get you double digits. But now you're not putting the pressure on him to be a premier pass rusher. And I think that what happened with that season is it was a blessing and a curse. Like, he went out and he had this phenomenal season that was partly because he's really athletic, but it was also partly because he was getting a lot of help from the other side and from up the middle that were forcing sacks to him. And he was able to be athletic enough to do it. So I don't want to take anything from him. But with that comes the expectation that you should be double digits every year. So when he wasn't double digits every year, when he was at those low numbers, all of a sudden it was a disappointment. Nobody cared that he was actually getting pressures, and nobody cared that he was actually opening things up for that, so that Grady Jarrett could have his star continue to rise. They just cared about the fact that when they looked at the stat book didn't say 10, 12, 13, 15 sacks. And so if the Titans are respecting him and honoring him for what he can do, or at least for the skill set that he has, I think that he can have a lot of success.
It's funny you mention that, because I remember after one of Rabel's pressers, I asked him on the side about the Falcons passers, and I asked him about Beasley. And this was before they played the Falcons this year, and he talked about their tiered pass rush and how Vic Beasley did a good job of not getting too deep on his path to the quarterback, and just making him have to step up into the pocket, into the guys like Grady Jarrett. So you're right on point with what Coach Rabel said. I thought that was interesting that you mentioned that. Now, when you look at Harold Landry, and this is the guy, he had 9 sacks last year. He did get pressures and those things, but he tailed off towards the end of last season. When you look at Harold Landry, what's your take on his skill set?
Well, I think that this is a situation where Vic Beasley actually helped, because I don't believe that guys like Beasley and like Landry are meant to get as many snaps. They're not your prototypical, 7 technique defensive end where you just have them rushing and rushing and rushing, snap after snap after snap after snap. I think that with those two, and I believe Walker coming back healthy, hopefully what you get is you get more guys that are able to give you that production. I think that if they're able to lower his snaps, that you probably won't see the tail off in production that you saw last year, because I just don't think he'll be as run down, barring any type of actual, like, legitimate injury. I think that's the type of pass rush that's the most successful in the NFL, is the type where you're not looking for one guy to get 13, 14, 15 sacks. You're going to have a bunch of guys that are anywhere between 6 and 10 sacks. And now you're able to keep those guys more fresh down the stretch.
But that being said, having that group of guys that are solid pass rushers, do you think that's a detriment when you're going against a Lamar Jackson, a Pat Mahomes, where you absolutely have to get home? Because that's what happened in the AFC Championship game. They couldn't get home. They couldn't get pressure. And Mahomes was able to buy time. And I know, you're not going to cover that group of receivers and that tight end for 4 seconds or more.
Well, I think it comes down to being sound in your rush lanes. Mm-hmm. What seemed to happen a lot versus Kansas City is they gave him an opportunity to escape.
Yep.
And that's because everybody's trying to get to him instead of being cognizant of what their rush lane is. So if you've got those two guys and you're saying, we're going to rely on Landry and Beasley and whomever else that we have out there to make this guy escape up the field, and now we're going to tell our defensive linemen, hey, listen, you're pushing, but you need to be under control so that you can shed and make the tackle when these quarterbacks try to get out of town or try to buy more time. And I think when they were having success, they were able to hold their rush lanes, and they made Mahomes not be able to kind of escape and get visions, those clear visions that he's able to create, almost like he's a souped up Aaron Rodgers. But when they allowed him to kind of make those moves, he killed them. And so if they can keep him in that pocket where he's not able to step up and find those different areas, now they force him to be able, or any other quarterback really, to be able to throw on time. And if they're doing what they're supposed to do in the secondary, there shouldn't be an opportunity to throw on time, and now everybody gets an opportunity to get home.
Yep, and that's exactly what they did. They were physical with the receivers in the secondary to knock off that time. So that's a great point. Obviously, you know, as a head coach, you are well-versed in the X's and O's. You have your show on YouTube, the series there. We'll make sure we shout out that channel. But that being said, how would you, when you look at this Titans personnel from top to bottom on defense, how would you utilize them? Would you stay in that base 3-4? What's your thoughts on their nickel package, their sub? How would you go about addressing those?
I definitely would stay in the 30 front. I think that they have a personnel that's tailor-made for the 30. I don't believe that they have a legitimate defensive end, a legitimate 43 defensive end, a guy who you want hand in the dirt 90% of the time as a 7 technique, you know, 9 technique off the edge, 5 technique on the weak side. I don't think they have that guy consistently to be able to rush off the edge and play the run. But I do believe they have an abundance of guys who work really well from four eye to zero that they can interchange and come up with different personnel groups. I'm actually doing an X and O's of Joe's today that I'm recording about the Titans defensive line. I'm going to show a few different packages that utilizes the personnel that they have. But I think that allowing those outside linebackers to be the rushers, and really, I've been saying it all day, I know, but allowing them to flush guys up the field is going to help, because they're only getting stronger in the back end. And if they can do to every team what they were doing to Kansas City early, it's going to be really hard for teams to score. And because of the way they play on offense, with that ball-controlled style of offense, mm-hmm. that's a lot less reps that other offenses are going to get. That's going to put them into panic mode. And you know, once an offense is in panic mode, that's where the sacks start to come in bunches.
Yeah, for sure. And when you look at that secondary, Christian Fulton, what's your take on Christian Fulton and how he'll fit into that group?
Well, I think he'll fall in. Could you see a Dory moving more inside?
Yes.
I think that's the move I would probably look to make, allowing a Dory to work more in the slot. Your nickel is, 85% of your, you know, of your package now in a lot of cases in the NFL. So, he's another starter. So essentially you just have, you know, you taking a starter with experience on the outside, you can move him inside. Now when you man up, both guys are comfortable in those areas. You can allow them to switch off on guys. So first man in, first man out. It allows you to play with a little bit more diversity in your coverage, which I always think is good to be able to disguise and throw off quarterbacks, because you'll get killed by any quarterback in the league if they're able to get their first read. So I think it allows them to have more diversity and do some different things with Adoree that maybe they've been thinking about doing but haven't had the personnel necessarily to be able to do. And so I look forward to seeing what they're gonna do in that respect. But, you know, coverage-wise, I feel like they have a really solid unit.
Yeah, I agree. Before we get you out of here, go ahead and let them know where they can find your X and O's, the Joes. And, folks, he sent me a T-shirt, you know what I mean, in the two-tone blue, X and O's, the Joes. So I'll definitely have to rock that for you guys on my next live, my IG live. But go ahead and let them know where they can find your channel.
Yeah, you know, on YouTube, Coach Gene Clemens. Feel free to like and subscribe to the channel. It's growing every day. We will have a nice little amount of Titan stuff that you can find in our NFL, in my NFL playlist. And if I get enough of it, I'll probably make it just an individual Titans playlist. So you can see all of that stuff there, all the X and O's, the Joes. We do some interviews, quarantine coaching conversations. and some other great stuff that we have coming down. So it's a good channel to subscribe to if you're a fan of NFL football, if you're a fan of X's and O's. Also, you can find me on any social media platform at Gene Clemens. So feel free to give me a follow there as well.
Do yourself a favor, folks. Do that. Follow him. You'll learn the game, man. It's great to have you on. It's been long overdue, so I'm glad we're able to get some of this great information from you. Thanks a lot, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I didn't even get a chance to, like, you know, beat on the table about this Ryan Tannehill thing. So, you know, we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get you back on. We got to talk that and get into a little Derrick Henry as well. So we'll be sure to do that in the coming weeks, man.
Absolutely.
All right. Appreciate it. Yes, yes, yes. The show doesn't stop. Talking with TD, we are back. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. I wanted to bring our next guest in because obviously you all know that I've been very high on Christian Fulton. And getting him at 61 was obviously a tremendous value. But I want to get into just some of the things that made up Christian Fulton. And what better way to do that than talk with one of the people he said has been the most influential people in his process. So we're going to bring in LSU DBU coach Corey Raymond. How's it going?
Man, how you doing today?
I'm doing really well. Before we get into Christian Fulton, I just want to check in with you. How's everything going as far as dealing with this pandemic that we have? Are you holding up okay?
Yeah, we're holding up okay. You know, it's a change for us, you know, being in that college world with recruits and not getting guys on campus and not going to have summer camp. So it's a lot of film work and a lot of Zoom meetings.
I would imagine that being the case. And having so many productive players like Christian Fulton and, you know, dating back to Jay Mills and Trey White and so many players, I'm sure that will help your recruiting process. And I think when you have a guy like Christian single you out as someone who was an influential person in his process, I think that helps too. So I have to ask you, what was it that drew you guys so close?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty much kind of close with all my guys.
Right.
I just, like I say, all the guys, they all, you know, like I said, I'm going to treat you just like my old kid. And the thing that is, when he came in, you know, he had a little situation and, you know, I just tried to make sure, like, everything's going to be all right. You know, it's just it's something that happens. It's something that you're going to get through. And then, you know, we're just checking on him every day, and it's telling me, you're going to get your time. You just got to be ready, be ready to go. You're taking it like you're having two red shirts and just be ready to go. And just talking to him about the mental aspect of not getting down and just staying positive through that whole process was the biggest thing for him. Just keep talking. Because it's been days, you know. It was hard on him, but, you know, just talked to him, you know, kept in contact with the family, just kept talking to his brother, just kept being there for him. And even the guys around here being there for him, that helped a whole lot.
How did he handle that whole suspension? And did you notice it sparked like a next level drive within him?
Yeah, it did. It got a spark when it got closer, then it had a down, then it had an up. You know, it was like an up and down thing. Because sometimes he'll see himself coming and play like, ooh, lights out. And he'd be like, man, I wish I could play that. Am I doing this for nothing? And, you know, it was just, and as being a young kid at the time, not understanding that, hey, it is light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, definitely. And then as far as the work ethic is concerned, is that something that stood out to you, just him being able to continue to put in that work, not being able to get that prize at the end of the week on game day?
Yes, he did do that. That's one thing he did. He worked like he was going to be a starter, and that's the thing that kind of, you know, kept me going with him and just kept being positive with him about he played like he was, you know, he was going to get me preparing himself to be ready to play out there. And, you know, we're going to push him in practice no matter what. It doesn't matter who you are, you're going to be getting pushed hard over here.
And then, obviously, that community, right, the LSU overall, but the DBs specifically, I mean, there's a lineage as far as the players are concerned. So that being said, did you ever connect him to Tyrann Mathieu, a guy who went through something himself?
yeah, connecting to with all the guys from Ryan Clark, you know,
yeah,
you know, all our guys, you know, with from Tyron, Ryan, he just to name a couple of even it's a bunch of guys that you know that he was really, you know, connected to, talking to him about the situation. Corey Webster, you know, all those guys, you know, they all spoke to him because we kind of all tight. Mm-hmm. You know, we all, you know, it's tradition. Everything is just passed down, and it's just like we're a fraternity, you know, more than anything. It's not about football with us. It's about us helping each other grow as men, and that's one of the most important things that I think we do here. You know, we'll fuss and fight, but we're all family.
What would you say was the biggest growth as far as a man is concerned in Christian as he went through that process, even just going from setting foot on campus to now?
Yeah, you know, the thing that probably, because, you know, he hurt his hand, he got hurt, and he came back, was getting ready, was probably going to wind up being our star nickel, mm-hmm. and then that situation happened, and then the fact that him can't play and them just came in the 2 years, it made him grow up fast, made him have to, you know, not give up on himself and all that stuff, not to, just to think about, like, as I said earlier, there's a light coming, and you just got to stay focused. You can't worry about what's going on. You can't worry about what this person saying. You only control your destiny, and that was the thing that he did. He controlled his destiny by coming and working every day, highs and lows. I told him it's no different than one day you might have to feed your family one day. You might lose your job one day. What are you going to do? You're going to stop? You're going to quit? You're not going to go feed your kids? You got to keep working, keep finding every little bit of thing that's possible to keep helping you through this situation because there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Now, see, having that type of message in his ear no doubt helped him push through. And at LSU, you guys ask a lot of your cornerbacks, right? I ask a lot of everybody. But, you know, you look at the cornerbacks, those guys are on the island. They're put in man and match situations. You ask them to play zone, too, obviously. Mm-hmm. What is it that makes Christian Fulton such an NFL-ready prospect?
Well, the thing is the part of us, you know, you're getting challenged every day, I think. The game won't be too big for him because he's been challenged and been put on that island where he had to be challenged. And, you know, and he might have got one or two passes caught on me, but I was in his face because I'm like, ain't nothing supposed to be caught on you. You know what I'm saying? Even though people are going to catch passes on you, that's just what it is. You play their position. But it was just a part of just challenging him. And I think that was going to make him NFL ready because, like most of our guys are, you know, they might not go this part in the draft, but they're going to be NFL ready. Because of the fact that you can see some flaws in our guys because of the stress they're going to be put on. So you'll see that. But it's only going to help them now because they're used to playing great guys every week.
That's
going to help them playing great guys during their time in the NFL.
Yeah, because, I mean, every week, you know, you're going against the Alabamas. You're going against, you know, Georgia. Yeah, you're going against some top-level schools. So that competition just in that SEC alone, obviously, I agree with that. And then when you look at where he landed, right, and I thought it was interesting because I asked Coach Vrabel about dealing with players or even evaluating players who face some adversity. And one of the things he said was good people sometimes make bad decisions. And he has to determine if it's a good person making a bad decision or if it's just a bad person making a bad decision, one of many. And obviously Christian is the first, a good person that made a bad decision.
No doubt.
But that being said, I feel he landed in the perfect spot from a scheme standpoint, but also from an approach standpoint. What's your take on where he landed as far as with the Titans?
Yes, I thought at the end of the day, you know, you always want him to go first, but I thought that the Titans was a really good fit for him because of the things that they do. Because, you know, being here, you know, we study different teams and watch them and watch their blitz package and the things they do where they put the corners maybe going in a half player. He can do all those things because of him being a nickel, being a pretty smart player. He can do all the things that they're going to ask him to do. And it won't be foreign to him. It'll be something that he's done before and that he's capable of doing. And I think that's why I think that the fit, the way they play, the kind of style that they play fits him too. You know, I mean, he's a good processor. He can read really good route combination. He's really good at that. That's the thing that have helped him in our route combination when we have to do those things. He's one of our best guys to do it from this school. I thought, like, off man, he's better guys than I've had.
Really? I like that. And then when you look at the slot receiver position, Vrabel had mentioned how there are so many more vertical routes that they're running. And he mentioned that's what he wanted out of a guy that could play nickel. I know Christian could do that, you know, and watching the Alabama game, watching him run with Ruggs, et cetera. But what's your input as far as his ability to cover vertical guys? Is that something that you asked him to do specifically?
Yes, that's the thing that, you know, when you're playing outside against us, because people know where we're in and you're going to get the vertical routes, you know. So he's done that. And even when we go in the slot, he had to be in the slot. Because I always thought when he first came in, he was going to be one of our best nickels because he can blitz too. Even though we didn't use him a lot as blitzing, but his freshman year and stuff like that, he's a really good blitzer because, you know, doing our blitz drill, we have a blitz drill where he's sending our guys and practicing against the running backs and tight ends, and he was really good at that. His movement skills and quickness doing that, and I think that's going to help him being able to blitz, but also be able to cover what we call the tape route, we call it a knife route, which is people going to be doing in the NFL, which we see in college a lot. You know, with number two just hauling off, he's just working that angle toward the sideline in the slot. You know, that's going to be the things that he has covered before, which will not be nothing he hasn't seen before.
A part of playing that nickel is being solid in run defense as well. Obviously, there are some questions, you know, some people that have picked at his game have said, okay, well, you know, he could improve as far as tackling is concerned. How would you answer those criticism?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just like most corners, man. Most of those people that say that, they have never been out at all. You know, most corners, they're going to – it's not that they won't tackle. You know, it's just the angle. And I think he's a willing tackler. He's not going to be afraid of tackling. And maybe a little bit of his time might have been me telling him, make sure, you know, he saved himself. You know, so yeah. I didn't want to lose him. At the same time, don't go throw your body. I mean, sometimes you got to know when to win and when not to. It's not that you're being a coward. It's not that you're not being a good tackler. It's certain times you got to watch yourself, throwing yourself into a pile.
Do you have any favorite stories when you think back over your time with Christian?
Oh man, let me go to one. We're really being kind of this year because, you know, we had all the young kids. He was like the oldest guy in the group. So yeah. It was like, you know, it was K-Baby babies around here, you know what I'm saying? So they would just pick at him all day. And like, they'd call his phone, just harass him, just pick at him all day because he was the only senior in the, because everybody else was freshmen. And he was the only senior in the room. And so my biggest thing was for him because he was so quiet, and they kind of really opened him up, made him have to be the guy, not just be a leader, but have to be able to also be the guy to talk to him too at the same time, talk to him about life and everything. So they got on him, and I thought that was one of my stories of him having to be a guy that has to be, you know, got his baby kids. I always say, Christian, you got him. I was, that's what I say. I didn't argue with him. I made Christian talk to him.
Yeah, he went from being the baby to the OG. That's funny how that works.
Uh-huh.
And before we let you go, being as though, you know, we're here in Nashville, so I have to ask you about one of your guys currently, and that's Jacoby Stevens. What's your, not prediction, but what's your outlook for him as he is entering this next season?
He's going to be a versatile player, you know, when that time comes for him. I mean, he could do a lot of things. He could play down in the box. He can go in the middle of the field. He's a good blitzer. He can wear a lot of hats out there on the field, and that's what's going to help him, you know, make him, you know, prosper whenever he gets that chance to be there on Sundays. I mean, because of just the thing, and he's a very, very smart player. That's what, you know, another thing that's going to be one of the things people are going to say, very smart, can line up in multiple positions and know what he's doing.
There it is. Coach, I appreciate you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is one of the guys who really helps put receivers to sleep on game day. His guys go out there and do their thing. Coach Corey Raymond, I appreciate you coming on. Definitely, I wish you the best throughout this ordeal that we're going through, and hopefully we'll see some football this fall.
Yeah. And I wanted to make you laugh. Definitely, the guy that we thought we had was Adoree Jackson when he was coming out. We thought he was coming to LSU.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
All
he's
right.
One of my guys. Good guy.
Yeah, well, he got that fifth-year option picked up, so it looks like he'll be around for a couple years, too.
It's good. Glad for him.
Yes, sir. All right, thanks, Coach Corey. Appreciate you.
All right, then.
All right.
All right, then. Bye-bye.
How do I say goodbye to what we had?
I'm just going to let it roll for a little bit. Just let it roll.
The good time that made us laugh, I'll wave them back. I thought we'd get.
Whenever you hear that music, you know it's a sad moment. Thank God no one passed away. So don't get over emotional about this. But Talking with TD is losing a pioneer, losing the guy who made it all work. Yes, folks, you saw Calvin's tweet last week. Calvin is moving on to bigger and better things. He's the guy that actually got me to consider analytics, because I was one of those, what do you call them, curmudgeons? Whatever it
curmudgeon.
Is. Curmudgeon? I was a curmudgeon and just despised analytics. But I've grown, thanks to my interaction and time spent with Calvin, I've grown to appreciate and respect numbers a bit more. But that being said, Calvin is now moving on. Go ahead and let him know what you're going to be doing so I don't botch it.
Yeah, so I am leaving 102.5, leaving media in general, and actually making a pretty big transition. So I do a lot of football here, but I'm moving into soccer and taking an internship, a data analyst, data scientist internship with Nashville Soccer Club. So I guess this is a little bit of confirmation. The analytics I do are pretty good, good enough to help me get hired in a pro sports organization, just not in a football, well, in a different football. So right. I'm super thankful for everybody here at 102.5 and this show for giving me a platform week after week to explore data and do all these things and share different thoughts, because I think that's one of the best things about the media is that we can disagree and we can help further these conversations and bring up new ideas. And Teron, you always gave me the opportunity to do that. Sometimes we beat the table and sometimes we agreed. But I think we had fun and there was always a great mutual respect. And I think that's one of the best things you can have in a good podcast. And I'm super thankful I got to work on this show.
Yeah, it's always been fun, man. I had a good time. Even, you know, the Derrick Henry thing. I don't know why all of a sudden. It was like the cartoons where the guy is sitting there and things just suddenly go red.
Yep.
That's what happened to me. Like, I spaced out. But that's the passion of the game, and that's something that is always fun to bring out when you're discussing it. And I'll tell you, there were some really good points that you made, and I actually plan to keep this Calvin's Corner going. So we'll definitely have you on and doing segments as your time permits.
And I'm excited to, because I think the Titans, I mean, I don't want to, it's not like I'm going to stop watching American football just because I go work in soccer for a summer, you know, hopefully longer. I don't know what the rest of my career holds or anything. I'm still 21 years old. There's a lot in front of me, but I'm not going to stop watching the Titans. I'm not going to stop following everybody I follow on Twitter and having my days absorbed by different sports. I love baseball. I love football. I really enjoy soccer. All these different things, they can kind of bounce off each other and you can learn different things from them. Football, just right in my backyard, and still makes so much sense. So maybe I won't be tweeting as much in terms of graphs and stuff like that about the Titans, because a lot of my time will be going to what I will be doing for a job now. But I'll still be up with the Titans and keeping up with everything going on in that world, because football is blowing up analytically.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's blowing up. So what do we have today? Do you have something on the docket, or are we going to sit here and reminisce the whole time? I'm going to let you steer the wheel.
So I don't really think I have anything for Calvin's Corner that's going to could necessarily blow anything away. I have been working on some stuff with football data that's attempting to value players based on how much their outputs vary. Mm-hmm. So instead of like taking averages or their highest totals or their lowest totals, instead looking at how like who's the most risky players out there. So right now I'm specifically starting with quarterbacks, and there's in finance there's this number called beta, the beta of a stock. And so part of what got me to Nashville SC is I have a pretty good background in investment finance.
Okay.
And so beta is something in the stock market that tells you how much a stock varies, how kind of wide it moves in terms of its price and its returns. And so I think that's a really good concept you can apply to sports. It's pretty tough to try to go in there and work on it, but something I've learned from it in my early lookings at it and trying to develop a beta type number for football is that Marcus Mariota was a very conservative quarterback. I mean, it's not like anything that's going to blow the world away, but it's just another confirmation that what you were getting from Marcus Mariota was I don't even want to call it a safe quarterback, but a conservative quarterback. And we already knew that about him, but again, it's just borne out in the variance of his results.
Were you able to plug Ryan Tannehill into that?
So the Ryan Tannehill with what was going on in Miami makes it a little bit different.
Yeah.
And the 10-game sample size. So what I'm working off of is a 5-year sample of data. So it's going to account for a lot of things that happened in Miami. And when you're talking about beta, you need sample size. You need more numbers that you can work with. So for Ryan Tannehill, I didn't feel as sure about that. So actually, I found out C.J. Beathard was actually had a pretty high variance, which I found interesting. Granted, he also had a pretty low average return, so that's going to kind of skew things a little bit. And he also had a good system he was working with Shanahan. But I was surprised by C.J. Beathard, BGA alum, right down in Franklin.
Who was the best that you came up with?
That's where I'm still working, is I get a general concept of how much they vary, but the final results aren't really working right now because of the fine tuning of the other aspects within the model that I'm working on.
Okay.
But this is something I'm still working on, and I think variance is something that needs to be quantified more in sports in general.
Yeah.
Because we look at averages and we look at highs and we look at lows, but variance and a statistic called standard deviation, which is just a measure of how wide of a range someone has in something, that needs to be accounted for more so you can actually look at, whoa, who's the most inconsistent and understand that a little bit better.
Yeah, so your beta NFL concept is in beta stages.
Beta stages. This is a long-term thing that hopefully it for sure can be applied to other sports too. But basically, with Ryan Tannehill, I can tell you for a fact that he would have had a high beta because of what you could get from him with his long passes that he hit over and over and over again with the Titans. And really, I think for what the Titans do and how their offense runs, I think having a quarterback with a lot of variance is a really good thing because of how steady the run game is. It's when you needed those shots, not only did you get them from Ryan Tannehill, you got them consistently, of course, but having that beta, you need that kind of risk in your portfolio when you have as steady of a run game as you do.
And it's funny because that's one of the things that I feel Ryan Tannehill does really well. And I've called him a game manager, but I say it in a complimentary role because, you know, when Tom Brady was first winning Super Bowls, he was a game manager.
Mm-hmm.
When Joe Montana was winning Super Bowls, he was a game manager.
Mm-hmm.
He executed perfectly within the scheme. Now, when you look at the Titans scheme, a part of that game manager for him is to be able to take those shots when they're designed to take. So I'm glad you mentioned that variance. And a lot of the shots came to a guy who you were early on in Khalif Raymond, right? And they resulted in a couple 40-plus yard touchdowns that just kind of put the dagger into the opponent's hearts. Now, one of the other guys that you really have talked up is Corey Davis.
Yes.
And obviously the fifth-year option, understandably, at 15 – just over $15 million, was not picked up. What are your thoughts on Corey Davis and that whole situation?
Yes, you know me well, Teron. I'm a Corey Davis fan. I think Corey Davis is a good NFL receiver, and I think that A.J. Brown came in and took the number one wide receiver role and absolutely deserved it because he was simply fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But what A.J. Brown did is such an outlier, such an anomaly with how he did it with the yards after the catch, that Corey Davis, while he is good after the catch, actually, if you look at next-gen stats, he actually has a lot of yards after the catch. But I mean, A.J. Brown was the best in the league at that. So banking on that with Corey Davis for having two receivers on your team who are going to do that, it's just kind of not a bet you want to take. So with Corey Davis, I feel like a lot of times when people talk about him and when the B word, the bust moniker gets thrown on him, I find it unfair because I think you look at the situation of how this team was built with Marcus Mariota at quarterback and the injuries and then Blaine Gabbert and the emergence of Derrick Henry, and Derrick Henry's going to get his carries. And then the defense plays really well, so that just fits the style of play you get with Derrick Henry. It's hard to find a receiver who's going to excel in that environment who's not doing what A.J. Brown was doing. And nobody else in the league was doing what A.J. Brown was doing.
Right.
Also, I think you look at the other receivers in that class, John Ross, Mike Williams. Mike Williams has had flashes. John Ross has had a couple flashes. It wasn't a great receiver class. I think Corey Davis still has the opportunity to be the best one out of those guys. It's just about opportunity in the system and situation you're in. I don't think Corey Davis really had that in Tennessee. Obviously, you can say if he goes to a place like Kansas City, yeah, he's going to have a lot of success there. But I think something that makes a lot of sense is Corey Davis, Sammy Watkins type players. I think Corey Davis could be a Sammy Watkins type of player.
Yeah, I agree. And I think when you look at talent alone, he's there. He has plenty of it. But that's something that you always have to factor in, is in what scheme was this guy in allowing him to showcase the talent?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, for whatever reason, the Titans just, it has not been a match for the number five pick.
Yeah.
It's a match.
Yeah.
Back end, like if Corey Davis was, and we talked about it, if he was 25 to 60,
even if he's, honestly, maybe even if he's picked 12, because then he's not top five even, you know?
It's just a different level of expectation when you go top five. And it's funny I'm about to mention this, because I've always been someone who says, you know what? If a player's good, you take him. I don't know that the Titans, if a player at a position is good, you take him. I don't know if the Titans should have taken a wide receiver top five, knowing the way they operate.
Yeah.
I've always used the caravan concept, you know, when I'm talking about Derrick Henry, and that, you know, a family man loves a caravan, but a single guy hates it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a running team loves Derrick Henry, but a passing team is, it's not for, he's not for them. Well, just the same, a team that predominantly runs the football, I don't know that you use that on a number five, in a top five pick on a receiver. So that's something to consider.
I remember coming out of that draft. At that time, the Titans needed a corner. They ended up taking Adoree Jackson later on in the draft. That was probably very much a part of their strategy, that they would like the value they could get for Adoree Jackson at 16 and Corey Davis at 5. But I know there were, I think there were behavioral concerns coming out with Marshawn Lattimore that year or something
there were,
like
there
that.
There were in the hamstring also.
Yes,
or something
a couple things like that. So that caused him to slide to 13 to the Saints, I believe. But, I mean, when you talk about positional need, what they ended up picking three picks later, Marshawn Lattimore in the top five, I don't think was a stretch based on his talent. I think looking back on the pick, obviously, I'm going to admit, you know, hindsight is 20/20, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you wish you could have Marshawn Lattimore. He's a top cover corner in the NFL right now. But with the positional need the Titans had there at the time, I could have seen that as a pick that would have made sense, too, getting at what you're talking about with a wide receiver at number five versus a position of need.
Yeah, and, you know, in that draft, my favorite corner in that draft was Sidney Jones.
Yep.
But he popped his Achilles.
Yes.
And after Sidney Jones, I really liked Trey Davis White. You know,
and
who
he turned out really
he
good,
turned
too.
Out outstanding. And it's interesting because Christian Fulton, and even that's something I should have asked Coach Raymond about, because they both have made that comparison to Trey Davis White for Christian Fulton. But anyway, that group of corner, it was packed with cornerbacks. And Lattimore was considered the top one.
Yep.
I'll tell you something else that's interesting. When you look at it, this is a team that had Mariota. And you always want to devote all of your resources to making your team your quarterback friendly, especially when you have. Mm-hmm. So I get what John Robinson did.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
He's like, okay, you know what? We have the high pick. We have another first round pick. we're going to go ahead and grab. I get it, but I don't know that's. I know this wasn't the best situation for Corey Davis.
Yeah, and it's just a shame because honestly, sometimes it just comes down to pure volume too, and that a lot of times receivers, you talk about a 1,000-yard receiver. Well, usually you need a pretty good amount of catches to get to 1,000 yards.
Yeah.
To get a lot of catches, you usually need a fair amount of targets, even if you're catching 70-75% of the passes thrown your way, which is a pretty high percentage. Michael Thomas catches like 83-84. So 75 is a pretty big number. So it just comes down to the style, the scheme fit, and with how the Titans evolved even after picking Corey Davis, it just seems like everything kind of went against him here in Tennessee. You'd love to see him have a breakout year and go get paid next offseason.
Yeah, that would be awesome for Corey Davis and for the Titans. If he has a breakout year, guess what? That offense elevates, and you know what? They mess around and be back in the AFC Championship.
Because of how NFL rosters turn over so quickly, I feel like teams should always be looking for the next big weapon they can get. They know what they have now in A.J. Brown. Now Corey Davis needs to have that resurgent kind of a year, and that's that different aspect that allows them to take that step again, because in the NFL, AFC Championships, even playoff appearances, are not given.
Yeah, hey, look, man, we know where the Jaguars were
really
a couple years ago, and look where they are now.
Yep. So. Exactly.
How about that? So that's the final edition of Calvin's Corner, at least as a member of, well, no, Calvin's always a member of the Talk with TD team. We'll stop that. But that's
in its current construction, I guess.
Right. As originally constructed, that's the final edition of Calvin's Corner. I appreciate everyone tuning in. Calvin, definitely, it couldn't have happened without you. The lead-ins that you've played, you know, being in the locker room, grabbing the guys, hanging out on the sideline, just laughing about whatever. It's been great, man. Thank you so much. I know you're going to kill it in your next opportunity, and we appreciate it. Appreciate all your help.
Appreciate you, TD. I really wouldn't have been able to get this far without you.
Hey, the show wouldn't be here without you, so it's a mutual thing.